Michael Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about...
August 25, Good Weekend issue, report on science, a person, future sense, and Michio Kaku, C-A-C-U, I know who he is, I'm not pronouncing his name, the story by Greg Callahan, and this is really worthwhile. It's one of these nice podcasting things, and it's from a newspaper article, and I'll send a podcast in to Greg and say, is it okay that I read this for cardiac rehab? There's probably about 10 people, or 10, 20 people worldwide who will listen to this. But Michio Kaku is sort of, Kaku, I suppose, is the sort of fairly famous icon. If you listen to the sci-fi versions of science, like quantum mechanics and stuff like that, listen to the song versions of it, you get, well, look, this is, he's a fairly famous person, you'll recognize who he is. So let's read into it, and it's also got the classic question and answer, so it means that in terms of podcasting, it's sort of ideal, unlike an essay where it's all structured and you've read it. The podcast is much more linear type stuff. Okay, talking to aliens via mathematics, turning the lights on with a thought, aging until we're 30, then stopping the process. It's all in our future, according to New York-based physicist and futurist Michio Kaku. I like the idea of futurist. I'm just going to say one thing. You can be a futurist, but if you're not identified as one, you're knocked out as mad. Let's not talk to him. Okay, this is Greg Callahan saying, we were once so optimistic about the future, believing science and technology would create a better life for everyone on the planet. Now, a pervading sense of pessimism. There is a pervading sense of pessimism. Have we lost our ability to dream? This American says, today's problems are enormous and challenging. Global warming, environmental degradation of population. But science and technology can go a long way towards addressing them and creating them, incidentally. There will undoubtedly be some tough times ahead in the 21st century, but I choose to be an optimist. We are a highly adaptable species. Uh-oh, this will be scary if you migrate. Okay, Greg's next question. Is the United States losing its edge in science and technology to China? The, Michio replies, there is potential for that to happen if we're not careful. Scientific development based on science education is the engine of prosperity, and the leaders of China and India realize that. We're going to see a rise of the new superpowers in science. China isn't going to make it the same mistake twice. In the 1400s, it was supreme. It had already created a movable type and building a fleet of ships, but then it languished. As Winston Churchill once said, empires of the futures are empires of the mind. Greg asks, what is the US doing to counter that threat? The US has a genius visa, which encouraged top scientists to come into the country, and now 50% of those working in Silicon Valley are foreign-born. But we don't know how long we'll be able to hold onto the brain drain from the rest of the world into the US. Trump has made a commitment to the space program, which would lead to a bounty of new technologies, just as it led to spin-offs like the microchip in the past. Hopeful thinking. How do you attract more women into science? Historically, a treatment of women in science was atrocious. Things are a lot better now. Up to 50% of students in biological science in the US are women, but it's not a protracted process. There's a danger of being condescending and patronizing to women students, imagining they can't handle heavy-duty maths. Luckily, that idea is dying. Greg says, science appears to have become unfashionable in the Western countries sometime after the 1980s. Now, well, fortunately I was in it. I loved it. So can I say, when I was visiting CSIRO, we had little wind cheaters with a big 70s map of Australia and CSIRO written in real 70s script with the byline, Science for Australia. I love that. Okay, there will always be hardcore science fans. The circulation of Scientific American magazine is about 1 million, and there are about 10 million people in the US who actively seek out scientific subjects, which is nothing. Personally, I can't understand why more people aren't jumping up and down about science. This is a very exciting time to be alive, I must admit. I, around 2000, said, you know, 2000's here. Shame I'll never see the human genome. Shame I'll never see this. Shame I'll never see reusable rockets. So I live. I'm really happy about what's happening. What inspired you to take up a scientific career? When I was 8 years old, Einstein died. And he was on the front page of what seemed like every publication in the country. I remember reading or hearing that he could not finish his greatest work, what would later become known as the theory of everything. I found it intriguing. I wanted to be part of it. We hardly knew anything about the planet when I was growing up, how nature works, how living things evolved. Yeah, it's interesting. It's the theory of everything, but you've got this particles and fields, the Higgs bosons and all that sort of stuff. Greg says, it's ironic that we know more about the planet at the very time we're systematically destroying. Some of our environmental problems will be solved by technological advances this century. We could see the solar age begin as battery storage capacity increases exponentially. Greg, you said the key to understanding the future is understanding physics. Yes, well, I don't know, key to understanding chemistry is physics and maths, and the key to understanding physics is maths. Physics teaches us what might or might not be possible. It forces us to understand the limits of science and how much of science fiction could become science fact. Strange answer. Hardly a month goes past now without scientists discovering another rocky planet in our Milky Way galaxy, located inside the Goldilocks zone, not too hot, not too cold, just right, and that can support life. Reply. In the Milky Way alone, there are likely to be 500 million Earth-like planets, and even if only a small fraction of these planets are home to evolve complex life, that's still a lot of intelligent beings. Yeah, I'm actually stunned by any intelligence. Well, yeah, I don't know. Yeah, we're out there looking for it, but we're overwhelmed by stupidity on Earth. Okay, Greg says, do you think we'll trace alien life this century? I don't know what trace means. Perhaps within the next 50 years, we'll be listening in on radio communications between alien species. Greg, the late Stephen Hawking warned that it might not be such a great idea for us to contact them. Well, this is great. As you could know from a futurist, some aliens could be warlike, but there are plenty of uninhabited planets for them to plunder. It's likely we'll ever meet because the vast distances involved. And if there are thousands of years ahead of us, they won't be terribly interested in us. We will be too primitive. Greg, they'd look at us as lower order creatures, much as humans regard animals on Earth. Exactly. We see squirrels as cute, but it doesn't mean we're interested in talking to them for hours. We'd get bored. Greg, would any conversation with an alien species be in mathematics? Question mark? Yes. I don't imagine aliens would care less about Shakespeare, which is for earthlings only. I don't know. I'd really get into a good old alien soapy. God, that would be really fun. Oh, that would be really fun. We will be talking in equations. Mathematics is the language, once you master calculus, it gives you insight into Mother Nature and external principles. Yeah, I don't know how much of a conversation you're going to have about maths, except, oh, that's great Gaussian you got over there. Oh, thanks, mate. Oh, look at this Bessel function. I've been working on this for a fair while. Oh, rubbish. Okay. The other thing Hawthorne warned us about was artificial intelligence. What's your opinion? We've been brainwashed by Hollywood on this. Our most advanced robot has the intelligence of a cockroach. We can't even get a robot to get out of a car. Something a 5-year-old can do. Hopefully not into traffic. We're not likely to see a robot that thinks and looks and talks like you, uses your voice inflections until the end of this century. Okay, that's that one. That's nailed that one really, really comprehensively. Okay, that's done that one. The McKinsey Global Institute predicts that up to 800 million workers in 46 countries will lose their jobs to robots by 2030. Robots are replacing many repetitive jobs. We don't cry about the fact we no longer have blacksmiths and wagon makers. I don't know. I didn't mind a good old blacksmith around the place. It's an old chestnut. The worry about new technology destroying jobs. I suppose that's the question, isn't it? Okay. Exactly. Exactly. Okay. Only 15 or 20 years ago, pundits were anguishing about the digital divide, those without access to technology being under the new underclass. It has never happened, because access to computers became cheaper and cheaper. The real problem is not access to jobs, but filling them. Plenty of jobs in technology are begging to be filled today, but they require workers with high level of technical and scientific education. Western governments need to put a lot more emphasis on this area. Or so you're telling us. Is it Greg? Yeah, Greg. Do you see religious fanaticism and terrorism as a threat to global order in the coming decades? That's sort of a left, you know, out of field question, I suppose. I don't know where that comes from. The terrorism of today is temporary and is a reaction to the fact that civilization is making a transition. Religions come and go. Okay, I'm just... the Zoroastrians might have a bit of a problem in Persia and the Jewish religion, but let's see how it goes. And the current wave of fanaticism is a reaction against modernization. We're moving to a type 1 civilization. Okay, well, there you go. Where the planet is entirely sufficient from energy drawn from the sun. That's scientific and tolerant. That's scientific and tolerant. Some folk don't want that. They imagine they'd feel more comfortable with the world 1,000 years before the rise of science. The rise of science. What? Okay. Much has been made of social media eroding our faith in democratic institutions. Is democracy under threat from privacy invading tech? Technology is a double-edged sword. One edge can cut against ignorance, poverty, and disease. The other can cut against our freedom and privacy. Democratic institutions are best we have in the world today, and people will fight to protect them. I think what Churchill said about democracy is the best of all evils or something like that. Okay. Greg, more than 20 years ago, you predicted the rise of the Internet of Things, in which the web would move into cars, phones, mobile appliances, and security. Now that's happened, what's next? Well, that's actually a thing. No, that's a good question, Greg. At some stage, the Internet will be replaced by BrainNet, where you can convey messages and memories rather than just text. Okay, this is actually quite interesting because this is the sort of area that I'm working on a bit. You could walk into a room, mentally turn up, not the actual physical turning on lights, but you know, your thoughts having a much greater impact. You could walk into a room, mentally turn on lights, the sound system and heating. In the coming years, the internet will disappear more and more into the background. It won't disappear, it will be more in the background. Your interface, the brain, I can sort of see what he's saying. It's sort of like Siri. It's just, you said that Moore's Law, the theory that the number of transistors can be squeezed into a computer doubles every 2 years. I think it's doubles every 2.5 years. I have to see. It is breaking down. We are already witnessing the slowdown of Moore's Law, and it will collapse within 10 years. Computers' power simply can't maintain its exponential rise using standard silicon technology. Semiconductor manufacturers are in a massive race to find a successor to silicon. You've written, we have no alternative but to colonize space. We need a backup plan. The dinosaurs didn't have a space program, and that's why they're not here today. Oh, I think they're just dumb old dinosaurs eating cycads and sort of leaving footprints all around the place. They're pretty messy people, the dinosaurs, in terms of the amount of footprints they left everywhere. Okay, Greg says, you believe there's likely to be not just one universe, but an infinite number of multiverses. Alternate universes with different laws to physics. Okay, he says, many think our universe is like a bubble. When the bubble bumps into another bubble, a big bang occurs, creating another universe. Okay, that's a popular thing. We'll probably get the answer to this question from orbiting space telescopes in the next few decades. I think Max Planck, you're not going to do much better than Max Planck. I don't understand where that's coming from. Will science be able to slow the aging process in the coming years? These are Dorothy Dix's questions? I don't know. Yes. You will know that he's got a view on aging, so you're asking the question. Yes, which is really good about how this can actually cover a large quantity of things. Yes, we're beginning to identify the genes that are responsible for aging. We live twice as long as chimpanzees, but genetically we're 98.5% identical, which means only a small bunch of genes are responsible for doubling our lifespan. If we can manipulate those genes, we might be able to reset our biological clocks. Children born since 2000 are already expected to live to 100, thanks to advancing medical technology. Do you see longevity being expanded further? Definitely. With advancing genetic engineering, it may be possible to stop aging process at the age of 30, say. You stop aging at that point. Let's hope their maturity levels don't stop at 30, though. Otherwise, we'll wind up with a society of permanent adolescence. We used to hear a lot about the promise of nanotechnology. What's happening there? I don't think people really understand what nanotechnology is my general thing. Okay. Nanoparticles could be particularly useful in treating cancer. Molecules can zero in on cancer cells and destroy them, leaving healthy cells intact. Chemotherapy, of course, kills normal cells as well as cancer cells. Early detection could mean we can eradicate cancer before they have the opportunity to grow into tumors. Studies over the past few years have shown that pancreatic cancer, for example, one of the most lethal forms of cancer, can take up to 20 years to form after the first cell's changes appears, which is more slowly than previously thought. It's a really interesting point. That, besides the other things, I think that's an interesting point. You're 71. Do you ever get tired of all the international travel your work entails? Sometimes I feel tired and old and ask myself, why am I doing this? But this isn't just work. It's my hobby. When it's not fun anymore, I'll stop. Michikuru Kaku is speaking in Australia on November the 8th to 14th. For more information, visit thisis42.com. Thanks a lot. Thanks, Greg. And I'll publish this and send it off to you for approval for Wired, for just including in my podcast. Thanks.
Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.